Let's turn to then the Gospel of John in the 13th chapter as we prepare for Holy Communion. Now, I have it listed as from verse 1 to 35, so you might be like saying, oh no, preacher, don't do that to us. So I'm not going to read the entirety of verse 1 to 35. That's going to just be too long. I want to focus in particular on this, though. These verses that are really the core of the commandment to love one another. He says there in verses 34 and 35, a new command I give you. Now, I'm reading from the NIV. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. The church father, Jerome, now he was the one who translated the Old and the New Testaments into Latin for us. He must have been an amazing mind to have done that, knowing both the Greek, the Aramaic, and the Hebrew in order to translate the scriptures into Latin for the Western Church, what we call now the Roman Catholic Church. But Jerome, he lived around 300-400s. So around 400, there's a story that's recorded of him. He said about this evangelist, John, the blessed John lived in Ephesus until the extreme old age. His disciples could barely carry him into the church, and he could not muster a voice to speak many words. And during gatherings, he usually said nothing. Now, this is Jerome recording the story of John. Could say nothing but little children love one another. That's straight out of his epistles. The disciples and brothers in attendance, annoyed because they always heard these same words, finally said, "Teacher, why do you always say this?" And he replied with a line worthy of John the Evangelist himself. "Because it is the Lord's commandment, and if it alone is kept, it's sufficient." Kind of reminds me when I read this story about Jerome of a story I was told once by a preacher when I was first starting out in ministry. Long ago, as some of you may know, he told me, he said, there was an old preacher who was approached by a parishioner of his who was critical of him for always preaching about love. He said to him, "Why do you constantly talk about that? Let's hear something else." And the preacher said to him, "I'll keep talking about it until you do." And then he said, quoting from John's first letter, "For love comes from God, and everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. And whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." This is the beginning of John's account of the Last Supper in the first verse of this chapter. Jesus had This Last Supper with his closest 12 friends of his, we call the disciples. It was not to be that all of them would prove to be a true friend, right? One was to betray him. Judas Iscariot would sell him out to the Jewish leaders to be crucified for blasphemy and rebellion. Most of the rest of those disciples remaining around the table with them right now would abandon him at the trial and would be nowhere to be found at his crucifixion. Peter famously would betray him 3 times. And Jesus in this short chapter predicts that, telling him and to his chagrin that he would betray him 3 times. And his last words then and actions here are especially important for us then, because John, more than any of the other gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, gives us the most detail about these last words. It's all the way through from chapter 13 here through the 17th verse. According to Google's AI, it's 133 verses that are a record of what Jesus had to say on this last night with the disciples in the Passover feast. The first verse says it was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Now that's the NIV that says this. It says, as I see right here in our projected scripture, they must be the New International, the New International Version, because the Greek actually does say, as it's given here, and the English Standard Version, which I've sort of been commending to people who are asking about translation to read. Greek, the New English Standard Version is, I've been impressed with, because it's really keeping close to the Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek in its original. It says, having loved his own who were in the world, Jesus loved them. He loved them to the end. Everything that will come, his words, his actions, his death, the manner of his death, and finally his resurrection. They're a demonstration, this is to say, of God's love for us. It begins with, in this chapter, it begins with what we celebrate on Monday, Thursday, Jesus washing his disciples' feet. When he had finished washing their feet, it says in the 12th verse, he put back on his clothes and returned to his place. And he asked them, do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord. And that's rightly so. For that is what I am, your teacher and your Lord. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. There's some denominations, some bodies who actually have a foot washing ceremony you may know of. Now, I've tried that in the past. In fact, some of you have gone on Emmaus walks and may know that's a central part of the beginning of the Emmaus walk for those in, who are leading it. But anyhow, I've tried it, and boy, that doesn't work. For one thing, it's too long, takes too long. For the other thing, man, people freak out thinking about taking off their shoes and socks for that. So I think the best thing that I've at least come up with was a hand washing. That seems to be a little more acceptable. However, anyhow, so Jesus says after that, washing their disciples' feet, I've set you an example, I'm picking up in the 15th verse. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor messenger greater than the one who sent him. And so now that you know these things, this example I've set for you, you will be blessed if you also do them. John then tells us about Judas betraying Jesus. I'm just going to gloss over that quickly. It's worth reading, but I want to get to the main thing. He says, just before telling Peter about the betrayal, his tragic denial of him, of Jesus, he gives us what's called the new mandate. In Latin, it was the mandatum, from which we get Monday for Maundy Thursday's service, which is the guide for all Christian living, really. A new commandment I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Look how many times Jesus repeats that phrase, love one another. Now, the word that Jesus uses is worth taking a moment to reflect on before we come to Holy Communion. The word in Greek is a specific type of love. Greek is interesting because it has a number of different words for love. Define, it's almost like, you know how Eskimos have something like 7 different words for snow? Because it's like they know about snow. And so they know that there's different types of snow. And I think it's the Hawaiians who had different words for lava because they knew that there was different kinds of lava. Well, the Greeks were aware that there's different kinds of love. And unfortunately, in English, we've kind of lost that definition. But the word that is used here is agape. Agape love. In the 4 loves that C.S. Lewis wrote, he defines agape love like this. It's selfless, unconditional, and divine. And it differs from the other 3. Now listen to what the other 3 are. Philia is love which is chosen friendship love. Might be called brotherly love, sisterly love, from which, you know, Philadelphia gets its name. There's another type of love, storge, which is similar to friendship love, but it's different in that it's the kind of love that parents and children would feel for each other, a familial love, a belonging love. And eros is then a third type of love, a passionate, romantic love that's characterized by desire, attraction, a sexual, perhaps, love, physical love. But agape, in contrast to those, is selfless, unconditional, sacrificial. It's divine love. Because really, without God, it's not achievable. And its focus is on the well-being, not of me, but of others. Not of you, but of others. Agape love is a voluntary act of will, some have said, which is a little bit wordy, but I think it gets at it. It's a voluntary act of will, rather than a feeling. It's focused on giving. Agape love is, rather than getting. The key differences, just to kind of break them out, five key differences between agape and the other loves are, agape love is willed love, rather than emotion-based. It's a Christian love that must be learned, whereas natural affections are instinctual. Philia, storge, eros. Agape love is about giving rather than getting. Other loves have a component of need love. It's needy. They're needy. Rather, agape love is gift love. Agape love is unconditional. Others are conditioned. Eros, philia, friendship, depend on mutual attraction, shared interests. But agape love can be given to everyone, including enemies. And so Jesus told us to pray for our enemies. In fact, to strive to love our enemies. That's difficult, isn't it? Agape love is permanent. And the others, they can even change, be transient. Because agape love is something that's founded in our God and Father, whose steadfast love, what? Never ceases. Its mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. New every morning. Because great is God's faithfulness to us. And lastly, agape love is supernatural. It's unnatural. Agape love is not self-sufficient. We can't generate it in and of ourselves. It's God-given. It must be received from the Lord. And so it's divine love that enters our natural lives. Someone said it prevents us from becoming, at the end, demonic. Now, because it's fraught, though, with our fallen, sinful, selfish nature, agape love is always striving, always improving, always, the scripture puts it this way, perfecting. It's only found in full in God's love. God's love is agape love. But brothers and sisters, let us ever strive for that kind of agape love that Jesus here commands of us, to love one another, even as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this all will know, the world will know, that you and I are his disciples, because we love, agape love, one another.